This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
A $2.4 trillion market, a combined 625 million population, free flow of goods, services and people. These are the holy grail goals behind the ASEAN economic community. But Britain's exit from the Eurozone shows the challenges of a common market, and so on hand to explain where the AEC sits on the timetable is Syed Nabil El Jaffry, the SecGen, Secretary General of the ASEAN Business Council. Syed, welcome to the show. Morning, now, of course, just to clear the misconceptions and where the cloud of uncertainty lies in terms of where the AEC sits, give us an update very quickly on where the AEC sits on the timetable.
Well, currently the ASEAN Economic Community, in conjunction with Malaysia's chairmanship last year, 2015, the ASEAN Community was formally launched. And since then, there are a lot of strategy action plans out for the advancement of the economic vision. So it's another 10-year blueprint. Yet another blueprint for ASEAN, and we're looking at another series of progress and talks and discussions and how to mature the market, to integrate the market, to connect the market. And there are a lot of interesting new disruptors coming in. Technology has been taken into consideration. So things that were not foreseen to play as big an impact as it actually is needs to be taken into consideration. There is a need to look at sustainable development, energy efficiency, labor rights, things that can produce a more equitable and not just a competitive environment.
Well, lots of debate and discourse and lots of 10-year blueprints and some such, but where exactly are the hard deliverables in terms of the timeline now? Where are we on the AEC?
I think, in my opinion, ASEAN, if there's anything that
does your opinion coincide with the AEC's?
Yes, yeah, I think so, because very much so, ASEAN Business Advisory Council is the apex private sector representative in the policymaking process. So we do look to provide advocacies and interventions with the public sector as much as possible. So we know that there is this huge disconnect between what is done at the policy level and what's really happening on the ground. So this is very much something that we at the ASEAN Business Advisory Council feel. But having said that, there are certain things that the private sector needs to take into consideration. For example, awareness on what's available in the market right now. When we talk about the free trade area, I think you mentioned earlier about the free movement of skilled labour. There's significant movement there with liberalisation in more than 127 subsectors. We do understand that under the ASEAN Framework Agreement on Services, there is this movement of natural persons where you have mutual recognition arrangements on professionals. However, that discussion has been quite sluggish when it comes to professionals, but that's limited to 8 professions. But 127 professions, in actual fact, Chuang, is actually liberal. So there is freedom to move, but this fragmented market that we're experiencing right now might go beyond economic differences, but more on social differences.
So some sectors, and in terms of human capital, yes, it ticks some boxes. But you mentioned, Syed, that you represent the private sector as the apex body of the private sector, but within the political sphere as well. I presume there's another parallel policy-making body which has to work to coincide their policies with your progress. So who's accountable? Who's in charge? Who spearheads?
Okay. Well, there are 3 primary pillars in the ASEAN community, namely political security, socio-cultural, as well as economic. For ASEAN Business Advisory Council, being a business council, we report to the ASEAN economic ministers who oversee the AEC. Malaysia is led by Yang Berhormat Dato' Sri Mustafa Mohamed. Subsequently, these ASEAN economic ministers report to the ASEAN leaders at every summit. The ASEAN BAC also gets to report to the ASEAN leaders at every summit, but a lot of the work is done and discussed with the ASEAN economic ministers.
So basically 3 arms, and each arm has a private sector and a public sector policy as well. So there are basically 6. It sounds quite convoluted, Syed. Sounds quite bureaucratic and sounds quite cumbersome and lumbersome. Is that the case?
I couldn't agree with you more, Chuang. If there's anything, this is a myriad of meetings and working groups and ASEAN. I think the ASEAN Secretariat has to organize some 1,000 meetings in a year. And we at ASEAN BAC, we advocate for better coordination between these pillars, between these working groups. And thankfully, during Malaysia's chairmanship, ASEAN BAC has been made the apex private sector body of not just the economic community, but as well as the ASEAN private sector representatives as a whole.
So some conceptual issues to discuss, Syed. You talked about how there is already some free flow of human capital, and quite rightly so. We see quite a lot of ASEAN nationals in Malaysia. But what about other things like, and these are things that we might have learned from the EU and the Brexit referendum in terms of unequal development of member nations, which I think was at the core of the Brexit vote to stay or to go. And unequal economic development also applies to ASEAN because we've got people like Singapore, Malaysia, and Indonesia at the apex, I think, to coin your phrase. And then you've got the Laoses and the Burmas on the other side of the spectrum. So how, from a conceptual standpoint, how are these debates being addressed?
Okay, well, from my observation currently, I'd like to highlight one key point. The European Union functions on the basis of an enforced commission, whereby ASEAN functions on the basis of consensus. So what I wanted to highlight earlier was the fact that ASEAN has been quite serious in negotiating for an integrated market, a single market.
Is that the right strategy, Syed? Consensual enforcement in a region which is far more in its infancy than a European Union?
Well, let's see, that there we are, because I know that there's a lot of attention, there's a lot of uncertainty.
Surely you need a very strong governing body and a very strong leadership to force things through, otherwise you sit in debate hell for years.
Agreed, Chuang, but we can see here, we are talking about a cluster of 10 sovereign countries, and they have their own agendas and priorities, and as you've mentioned, there is this development gap between the ASEAN 6, what is called the ASEAN 6, and the CLMV, Cambodia, Laos, Myanmar, Vietnam. When we look at how the global environment can play a better role, ASEAN has engaged into another 6 countries, two of them being big powerhouses, through the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, where we have India, China, Korea, Japan, Australia and New Zealand. How this plays into your question is, if you look at the CLMV countries, they are all neighbouring with China. And China is developing the southern region very much on an aggressive and quick basis. And CLMV has done a lot to leverage on this opportunity, the infrastructure for the greater Mekong states and the development of the One Belt, One Road that's through them. And Laos, for example, is the chair of ASEAN this year. And one of their key priorities is, in fact, logistics. So we can see that helps narrow the development gap with the investments and infrastructure that's coming up in the CLMV countries. And at the same time, why this benefits ASEAN as a whole is this infrastructure allows these Mekong states to catch up with ASEAN a little bit, to be better prepared to develop a single market.
Now, earlier you talked about the CLMV countries, side, and by virtue of their proximity to China, the number two economy in the world, they do a lot of business with China. But here we are in terms of international relations, and you know, the Americans and the Chinese are going at it hammer and tongs in the South China Sea, the nine dash line, which divides the ASEAN 10 countries along further political lines, because we've got some countries within that grouping closer to the Americans and some countries closer to the Chinese. What impact does this whole nine dash line and the geographical spats between the Americans and the Chinese got to do in terms of affecting the ASEAN timeline?
Well, I think this affects, I mean, what's going on in North America and what's going on in China at the moment currently affects the entire world, and ASEAN is no exception to that. I completely agree with you. However, from an economic perspective, we can see that Malaysia to be seen as a good example. As you've highlighted, Malaysia is a participant not just in the ASEAN Free Trade Area, but as well as in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And when we look at numbers, China has overtaken the US as one of as the biggest trading partner with Malaysia, and this is the case with a lot of the other ASEAN countries as well. But when we look at opportunities that come with this global economic environment at the moment, is that it's a good opportunity for us to look a little bit closer to home. ASEAN is very much an emerging market. In fact, the fastest emerging market in the world. Intra-ASEAN trade is still not on the higher side yet. For example, Malaysia has been doing well to push that up, to bump that up. So Malaysian businesses are beginning to toe the line. 27% of total exports, Malaysian exports, actually go within ASEAN.
Well, that's good that you mentioned that side, because 9 out of every $10 in Malaysia, which is made in terms of output terms, is exported. Now, at a time when the global economy is slowing down and everybody is a bit concerned about the future, it serves Malaysia's interest, as with the rest of ASEAN, to see the AEC through in terms of the common market advantages. Now, that's clear. But without cohesive integration within the 10 ASEAN nations, we're not going to have a common market to sell into, and that might affect everybody's growth. So what kinds of things are the good selves in your business council doing to proactively make sure the timeline is better adhered to than being late?
Okay. Yeah. When it comes to the economic integration, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it extends beyond economic and free trade agreements. It requires the people of ASEAN to pick up and galvanize them to integrate and interact more with each other. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. In the ASEAN, one of the key deliverables by Malaysia's chairmanship in 2015 was the inclusion of youth and entrepreneurship in the ASEAN Economic Community Blueprint, where they have the strategic action plan as a whole.
The young can't move without the old performing their side of the equation. Now, you're dithering back and forth. The CIMB chair has mentioned, I mean, he's one of the corporate luminaries. He's mentioned that AEC is late, and it doesn't serve anyone's interest to be late on this timetable.
Agreed. But I would like to talk about an ecosystem a little bit. When we know that about when you mentioned the young and the old, I'm not sure.
The young are not in the corridors of government side. The old are.
Agreed. But the young do represent a huge population a huge demographic in the population. 620 million people, 60% of them below 40 years old, 70% of them below 45. We know that these people hold a lot of promise when we're talking about the impending consumer boom, when we talk about increasing urbanization. These are things that the young very
Correct.
Much play a significant role.
And precisely
role
that, without a framework to operate into and to click into, like a Lego brick, for example, the young of ASEAN, like the Singaporeans and the Malaysians and the Indonesians and the Thais, they're going to be emigrating to the developed countries, the UKs, the Australias, the USs, and the Canadas. They're not going to be wanting to move within ASEAN without a framework to move into. So the young cannot move without the old getting their act together.
Agreed. So, however, the young is driving certain new industries such as technology. If we look at technology, this is a way to connect. This is a low-hanging fruit, as a lot would say, to connect the market a lot more. It is fragmented, but technology gives you, I mean, literally at your fingertips to connect better with one another. So we know that there are issues in ASEAN. The main primary issues would be the access to finance, access to market information, and access to technology. When it comes to access to technology, the young might not be facing as many problems as the old. For example, ASEAN is the second largest community of Facebook users in the world. And internet penetration is on the basis of 10% per annum. That's huge. And when it comes to e-commerce embracement, Thailand and Malaysia is in fact second and third fastest growing in the world by the Digital Evolution Index issued by MasterCard. But I agree with you, Chuang. When it comes to the framework, when it comes to the environment, the governments need to work together. And yes, we are lagging behind. That could not be. I could not agree with you more. But the young can connect people to people. And that's why Malaysia, I mean, here we are fortunate enough to be able to organize another historic occasion where we're dealing with real things, with real business people, with real stakeholders of ASEAN, and to push what is what we call the new digital revolution or industrial revolution, and to be driven by ASEAN. ASEAN is, in fact, a very unique environment. And with technology coming into the fold and the streamlining and benchmarking of that, we have that valuable opportunity because the entire world doesn't exactly know what this disruptor is going to do to the economic landscape in the near future. And we have this opportunity to meet together at the ASEAN Young Entrepreneurs Carnival on this Friday and Saturday.
We are talking to Syed Nabil Al Jaffery, the Sec Gen of the ASEAN Business Council. You know, look, I'm inside. I get your hyperbole. I get your PR and your messaging about the youth and all that. But the youth, they don't have to stick around for you guys because the internet is international. It is global. It doesn't span an ASEAN framework. It doesn't span 10 countries. If you guys can't get your act together, the youth are not going to stick around. In fact, this integration work and is integration a good idea, given the Brexit referendum and all the attendant challenges that have surfaced within the common market in Europe?
I think we're on the same page, actually, Chuang, when it comes to speeding up or expediting the integration process. I mean, we've heard about it for a long time. We, the businesses, are trying to break out as quickly as possible, leveraging and maximizing and capitalizing on what's available here, this melting pot of opportunities for us in, as you mentioned, a $2.5 trillion market, the seventh largest market in the world. So we call upon better engagement to ensure that elements that are real to the people. When you talk about reduction of tariffs, that's fine. Non-tariff barriers need to be looked at. We need to talk about a freer movement of people.
How and in what concrete directions is the AEC moving to make sure the timeline is not further delayed? In fact, Syed, is integration that good of an idea in the first place?
I think integration is a good idea. It's very much a good idea because of the nature of these 10 countries. When we look at, the integration process in itself, infrastructure is still lagging behind. We know that there are a lot of regulations and policies that need to be put into place. We know that business practices, intellectual property protection, consumer protection, things that can connect the people a lot more. When it comes to visas for freer movement, preferences for ASEAN citizens. These are things that can be seen as a low-hanging fruit to connect the people more because essentially, ASEAN is supposed to integrate to better attract investment. Every single country in ASEAN is out there to look for investment, and when they work in a group, it's a lot stronger for them to do that. And if they don't connect, they're going to have problems and the ultimate goal is not going to be achieved.
How and in what concrete direction, Syed, is the AEC moving to learn from the Brexit and the common market challenges?
I think the way ASEAN is looking at things, and I think the ASEAN economic ministers will be meeting again next week as part of our interventions, we're talking about increasing or intra-ASEAN trade, and we're looking at priority integration sectors that can be really looked at and to be targeting on these sectors. And
How has the common market affected the dialogue? Has it affected the dialogue?
Well, the dialogue, when we talk about the common market and the dialogue itself.
The European common market and the challenges inherent, because now with the EU leaving leaving the common market, and now Italy, France and Spain also making similar noises, has the EEC taken and analysed very closely what happened with the European common market to learn from its challenges?
I think the senior economic officers are actually going to take this up at the CEOM meeting at the end of this week in Vientiane. I think one of the key issues is the fact that the ASEAN community working on consensus, whether it should continue on that basis, because there are certain enforced regulations that are being inserted into the blueprint at the moment. But I think there needs to be a relook at that, because when it comes to the emerging markets, everyone's aggressive. So having an enforced commission at this point might cause disagreements. And I think this could be paid particular attention to, so that proper benchmarking can be achieved between all 10 ASEAN countries before any kind of regulations can be put in place.
Now, staying on the concrete issues of integration, Syed, it's quite well acknowledged by studies that not every one of the 10 member countries will have equal benefits from integration. The slower countries might be slowed down, and the faster and the smaller economies might be sped up. That plus language issues, plus plus trade issues and protectionist barriers. At a time when protectionism is also rising, what are the concrete measures being taken to address these issues?
I think one of our advocacies is for. In connecting the people and some of the things to connect the people would be, first of all, enforcing responsible business practices. So there is a benchmark for business entities to be recognized all over ASEAN countries. This will trickle down to other benefits, such as cross-border access to finance, recognition of certifications for the freer movement of businesses to be more nimble to venture out into ASEAN. When it comes to ASEAN citizens, to heighten awareness and to encourage people to move around more and explore whatever employment and human capital opportunities there are out there. There is a lot of encouragement to be using technology. However, all the countries need to play a big role at national level, to coordinate at national level, to make ASEAN their key priority in their economic agendas. Therefore, making it a lot more conducive to work together. We can't continue on the basis of national interest and regional interest not being coordinated, not being streamlined, and some countries are notorious for being protective, and these things need to change, because we don't want discussions to go back and forth constantly. Businesses want to move quickly. They want to capitalize on the opportunities.
These remain conceptual issues, Syed. Yeah. From a very, very basic standpoint, for example, the treatment of Indonesian maids in this country, that's one particular area which hasn't been addressed and still continues to be riddled with debate, even on issues like the environment and the haze, which has been around for maybe a million years. These are very real and very pedestrian and very, personal issues to every person in ASEAN. There's no point dwelling on the conceptual without addressing the real and the practical.
Agreed. I think you've highlighted a very, very strong point there. Let's look at the example of movement of unskilled labour currently. Indonesia and Malaysia, this is a hot issue about the maids that are coming into Malaysia. I mean, it doesn't stop there, actually. Myanmar, in fact, and Cambodia are also concerned about the movement of their labour into Malaysia. That's why for us at ASEANBAC, we advocate for responsible business practices and the incorporation of labour rights in each ASEAN country. For example, what we deem to be mistreatment here might not be necessarily be deemed as mistreatment in some other countries. And we know that some other countries might be still developing socially, for example, the Rohingya issues in Myanmar, so on and so forth. So there needs to be a certain benchmarking, Chuan. This is what we're talking about a certain standard. And these are things that the SMEs need to embrace as much as possible. So minimum wage and things like that need to be taken into consideration. Last but not least, again, another very, very good point that you've highlighted, which has not gotten as much attention as it should, and we should learn this from China, is sustainable development. And when we look about energy, being aggressive in our growth is important. We want to get there as quickly as possible. But at the same time, we need to look at what is sustainable, and energy efficiency is something that we should be looking at as well.
Syed, you've been very, very helpful in terms of clarifying the ASEAN economic community. So thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you.
That was Syed Nabil El Jaffery, the Sec-Gen of the ASEAN Business Council, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.